Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2, Anne Fagan and Harold Kimball interviewing Mrs. Gussie Shore on Thursday morning, May 8, 1986. Mrs. Shore, we're going to begin by having you tell us your address and your age, that is the year of your birth, and after that we're going to talk about your childhood and your parents. Okay, so would you start with your name and your address and your date of birth, please?
Oh, my name is Gussie Shore, and my date of birth is January 7th, 1900.
Eight. And your address is?
My address?
Your present address.
It's 401 Shady Avenue, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Great. Okay, let's start with your childhood.
All right.
Tell us about your life on the Lower East Side and your family.
Well, it would have been more exciting if my mother wasn't away all day. She was working in the factories, and we were by ourselves. So, you know, usually there's little arguments of who's the boss and, you know, who isn't. Somebody gets slapped and something like that.
Tell us where your mother and father were born and what you remember about when they came to this country.
Well,
That was, of course, before you were born.
Yes, I was the firstborn here, although I had an older sister. She was brought over with my mother. She was 2 1/2 or something like that.
And your parents came from?
Came from Russia. Russia, Poland, on the border. There was always wars there, constantly wars.
Do you remember what year your father came to this country? Do you have any idea?
No, it's very hard for me to because it was before I was born, and I don't remember. I can't recall them talking. If they did, I didn't know what they were talking about.
We have to assume it was the late 1800s.
Yes, right, in the late 1880s.
And he came first, you said. Can you tell us about that?
I could find out of his birth if I would call
the immigration
city of hope,
yeah,
or the something like that.
That's all right. We didn't need that. Just tell us about what he did when he first came.
Well, when he came to this country, my uncle took him. You know, told him that he'd take care of him and help him, and my uncle had already established some kind of a little hat shop in a basement of New York, where they had a big boiler and where they used to have the steam covering the tops of the hats. They were in six sections, like three, and to fit the head. And this is what they did in Europe, and they did the exact same thing here. But then,
and his name, your father's name?
My father's name was Samuel.
Last name?
Kirshner.
Didn't you say that had to do with hat making, with the actual
Yes,
name?
That's the trade of the cap maker.
Yes,
Kirshner, that's what they called him. So
he came here and he got into the hat making business.
Yes, and he got ill because he was trying to save money for the ticket for my mother. Mm. By sleeping in the basement instead of going as a boarder in somebody's house, you know. So he became ill, but he didn't think he was, he knew about TB, but he didn't know he had it by then. Mm. And as the days went, you know, further and further, he bought the ticket, and my mother came with my sister. And one day he started to cough something terrible, and he spit blood. Mm. And my mother knew right away what was happening. And she says, "What's the matter with you?" He says, "I'm fine, I'm fine." He didn't want to tell her. Mm. But he broke down later, and he told her. And
he would have been a very young man.
He was very young, yes. It was his first, my mother was his first wife.
Okay, and your mother's maiden name, do you remember that, Mrs. Shore?
Or her first name?
Yeah, your mother's first name?
Sora Bela.
Sora Bela.
Yeah, that's Sarah.
So
Bell.
In English it would have been Sarah.
Yeah.
Sarah Bell.
Right, uh-huh. Right.
All right. So she then had your older sister and you.
And me. I was born after 9 months. I came. You know, mm-hmm. She came from Europe. In those days, he went to the Essex Clinic on Essex Street to call a doctor. Mm. They were students there studying. It was sort of like a school. They had the dentistry. They had every kind of, you know, what was the matter with you. They were healing you for nothing.
This was on the Lower East Side?
On the Lower East Side, the Essex Street Dispensary. They also provided the medicine if you needed any.
Hmm.
For a reasonable 10 cents or a nickel, something like that.
And he continued to work at hat-making?
And he continued to work at hat-making. It got worse, and he had to quit.
Yeah.
So he had to be taken, rushed to the hospital, and my mother was always going to the hospital from the work, you know. Mm. It was very bad.
Tell us about how your mother managed the things that she did to look after you and your sisters.
Well, my mother was always doing little favors for people that were very kind to her. They would slip her a dollar or would slip her a dozen eggs or something like that, or a half dozen eggs, not a dozen, a half dozen eggs.
And she worked at?
And she worked at everything under the sun. She was a midwife. Mm-hmm. She didn't know anything about it, but she, mm-hmm. and she, for 2 weeks, 24 hours a day, you know, a whole night practically. The baby was up at 2 a.m., you know, for him.
Mm-hmm.
And she had to pick up the baby and bring it to the mother. And that was $8 for 2 weeks.
Did you live, do you remember the house that you lived in or the circumstances of the place where you lived? Could you describe that for us, perhaps?
Yes, I remember it very well because when I was 7, we got a piano and my mother put it in the bedroom because there was no room to unfold the folding beds when the boarders went to sleep at night.
Yes.
And from the time we got the piano, I carried on terribly before we got it. And there was no way my mother was going to buy me a piano because that was the last thing in the world she needed. And she says, "You must be out of your mind. Where am I going to get the money?" But finally, my sister, oldest sister, said to my mother, "We have to get her something. We have to get the piano for Golda."
And you had a younger sister as well. There were
I had two younger sisters.
Two younger sisters.
Yeah.
So there were four girls, to look after. Yes.
And when my father died, the neighbors came into the house, and everybody brought some cookies or something, you know. Mm-hmm. And they all nodded their heads. They said, those girls will never get married. They don't have a dowry. They don't have a nickel to their name. They're bare.
This was a Jewish community.
That was all Jewish, yes, all Jewish.
Yes, did the people help each other?
Well, no, they weren't very friendly because they were all struggling.
Yes.
They were all struggling very hard, and they weren't... weren't friendly. They all were looking for their own life, you know, their children. And,
so everybody had to survive.
Yeah.
How old were you when your father died?
I was 6 years old.
What, did your father die in New York?
No, my father died in Denver, Colorado. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us the circumstances of that?
Yes. The doctors that he went to, all had applied. They bought this ground in Denver because of the mountain air. They said the only way to cure TB is through the good fresh air and fresh food, you know, eggs and milk and everything that you need to build up the body, because that the lungs were destroying your body. You're willing to do anything. He was always tired, my mother said. And he always carried a little cup with him, paper cup, so he can spit in it, you know, he wouldn't annoy anybody. And so my mother said, "That would be wonderful, but before you go, I want to take you to my sister. Maybe in Iowa," she lived in Des Moines, Iowa. She says, "Maybe in Des Moines, Iowa, the air is better. And let's try that first before you go to Denver." So they did.
Did you all go to Des Moines?
Yes.
Let's see, the four girls and your parents?
Yes.
Yes.
Four girls.
By train?
By train. By train.
That must have been an exciting trip for
you. Yes. Yes, it was. I don't remember it at all because I was held by my mother. And then my older sister was walking. You know, she was four by then, or four and a half. And
so you visited in Des Moines?
Des Moines, Iowa, but my father still coughed with the fresh air, and he...
Visited who?
The sister, her
and
aunt,
he,
Mrs.
My,
Shore's
my
aunt.
My aunt. But he was annoying the family, you know, by coughing. Mm. He felt very bad. He didn't want to stay there. So he went back to New York. They went back to New York. Then when the doctors proclaimed that area that they bought, and they're starting to build little houses for, you know, to keep the patients in. So my mother was all excited. And there were a group of women that were in the hospital with, they weren't in the hospital, but their husbands were in the hospital, and they all stuck together, you know.
These were the women in Denver, the where
women,
the hospital was.
No, this was in New York, but then when they got to Denver, they all went together, you know, the men of four, I think, or five, that were in this hospital, and they went there. And he was there a whole year, and he wasn't getting better. And he wrote my mother a 12-page letter.
This was, and she was just a young woman then with her four little girls to look after.
Right.
So it would have been very difficult for her.
It was terrible.
But
she never told us anything sad. My mother sang while I played the piano. Mm. And
was it a Jewish hospital in Denver?
Yes.
Do you remember the name?
I think it was the City of Hope. I'm not I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Because I used to give money to it since I'm in Pittsburgh.
I think you mentioned earlier that at the time it was called the Jewish Tubercular Hospital.
I can't remember. I won't
Thank
say
you.
Because
right.
I can't remember. But now it's they have a new building on the grounds. I was there, and it's called the National Center for cancer, I think, something like that.
Okay, now we've talked about your parents. Let's talk about you and how you met your husband and those early days of courtship.
My mother was constantly looking for family of my father's because he was the baby of the family. He had sisters and brothers, and they're someplace in England, but in the United States, my mother tried to find them, and she found a family by the name of Sherman that was a cousin to my father, and or a second cousin. And my husband, he was only 18 at the time, or 17, and he came to see if that's the right family.
Did he know the Sherman family? Was he your husband in some way connected to that family?
My husband, yes. Oh, yeah, it was the son of
of that family,
He came with his sister. He wanted to see who the new family And my mother and his mother, they became close, and this is how I got married.
You were how old when you met Mr. Shore?
I was, the first time I saw him, I was 14.
And his name was Max.
Max, yes. Mordecai.
Yes. Yeah. What did you think of him when you first met him?
I didn't like him at all because he was a foreigner. He had a foreign accent. I couldn't take that at all.
Did he speak in Yiddish or in English?
He would speak in English to me. Oh, yeah.
But he had an accent.
He had an accent.
Yes.
And he wasn't the fellow that I imagined in my dreams at all. So I used to hide out when he'd come to the house. And by that time, my mother had already remarried. When I was, she remarried when I was 12. This is, I'm 17, I was still 16.
Yes.
And whenever a tenant, my mother was a janitor, so she didn't have to pay the rent. She took care of the building.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever anything happened, they would call down, Mrs. Kirshner, the window doesn't open, you know, so he would run. He'd come to the house and he'd try and help and fix all those things that had to be fixed.
Did that make an impression on you?
On my mother and, oh my goodness, my stepfather. Oh, they thought there was nobody in the world like him. What are you looking for? Who do you think you are? I mean, what chances have you got?
And you were how old?
I didn't worry about chances.
And you were how old when you and he married?
17.
And did you married in New York? Did
yes,
you?
Yes. Yes. It was in my mother-in-law's house. My mother said she pushed me into it.
And you were telling us a story about your wedding dress. As
yeah,
I recall.
She went and bought me the dress. She paid $2 for it. She says, isn't it nice? I said to myself, that's terrible. $2 from a push cart. Oh, my God. And I really never had a honeymoon because when we went to Pittsburgh, we only stayed in New York after the wedding 4 days. We went to Pittsburgh. His sister had sent her two little children to their mother, you know, to my mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And I had and my husband had to bring them back.
So
I had a baby
York,
and he had a baby.
Traveled with two babies
right,
to come to Pittsburgh.
To come to Pittsburgh.
I see. And where did you settle when you came to Pittsburgh?
We settled in the 2700 block Penn Avenue. That's where he had a store, my brother-in-law.
Now that area would be called the Strip District.
That's
as we
it.
Know it.
Yeah.
Yes. And
I worked in the store and he worked in the store.
We didn't get any money.
We just worked there, you know.
This would have been about 1917.
17.
Huh.
It was 1917.
Okay. Can you tell us what it was like on the Strip District in 1917?
Well, at that time, the factories in around the Strip District, they were still making, you call those, like, To fight the war, bullets or
bullets and ammunition.
Ammunition,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think mm-hmm. Westinghouse did it. They
yeah.
had, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there was
war activities. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And my husband, before I was married, he was called to service. To serve the country.
Mm-hmm.
And he came here in the United States when he was 9 years old. Instead of going to school, he sold papers on the street, you know.
Mm.
That I resented all my life, that he didn't, you know, study.
Yes.
But he was able to read and write. I have a lot of books that he bought. You know.
Now, he went to work for his brother-in-law.
Yeah,
he
went to work for his brother-in-law.
Store.
And they opened a store,
mm-hmm.
a 43rd and Butler. And a grocery store, didn't have anything else, just groceries, mm-hmm. you know.
By that time, the war was
it was
starting?
Starting
was
to be, it, well, when I had my first baby, Sydney, when he was 3 months old, the war ended.
What do you remember about those war years, the First World War, what life was like for you then? Do you have some recollections of that?
We had no boys in the family. See, my mother, we were all girls, so yes. There wasn't any idea of us serving, you
yes.
know. But my husband's family, she had my mother-in-law, they had a lot of boys. And my husband was called for service, and he was examined. He had a bad eye, one bad eye, so he was rejected. But the next day after that, they took him anyway, flat-footed, everything.
So it was lucky that
it was very lucky,
yeah. What about the Jewish community in the Strip District? What do you remember?
They held together like this.
Mm.
They were very helpful to one another. They were very kind to one another.
Good.
And that's when we had our own little synagogue. It was like a one-room church.
Mm.
It was a church before we bought it.
Can you remember where it was on the Strip?
It was on Liberty Avenue, 28th and Liberty.
Huh. Yeah. What was it called? What did you call
the
it?
The Ohav Shalom.
Ohav Shalom.
Yeah.
I see.
And we went there, and I always, my whole family went. My boys and my daughter, we all went to the synagogue, and we all had seats. We didn't have to pay for anything. It was our synagogue. We worked for it. I made every holiday. I would bake lots of cake, and there was a store. I had all the ingredients.
Yes.
And pickle the fish, and pickle the herring, and Max would go down the market and buy up candy and fruit and everything for all the holidays that you know, for the shul.
And you say it was just one room?
Right.
Did you have a rabbi?
We would rent a rabbi. Yeah.
So it was a rent-a-rabbi synagogue.
Right. That's, we didn't have a steady rabbi. You know.
Can you remember approximately how many families there were involved, or how big the group was?
There were many. Could be a dozen.
I see.
That's all.
But you kept it going.
Each one was a jewelry store, one was a clothing store, one was a shoe store. Mm. So, you know, it was, they all kept together, yeah. And we bought ground for, my husband used to say, for the other world that we have to live in.
So there was a, there
so
was
we
a,
have
cemetery,
a cemetery
that belonged
to
the congregation.
My husband's buried there, my mother and my sister who died of TB.
So the cemetery still exists,
yeah,
does
yes.
it?
Yes.
Where, and it's called the Ohav Shalom Cemetery? It has the name of the congregation.
Betty knows where it
yeah.
is because she's been forced secretary for years.
Well, that's interesting. So
we're trying to give it away to the next cemetery.
I see.
Next door to us, because there's not enough people to hold on and do the work, and you know.
But it was an active group. You had your own congregation
own
and your
congregation,
own
and we
cemetery.
Kept up. Everything was beautiful.
I missed. Where was the congregation? Where did the congregation meet?
Yes, the address again, Mrs. Shore, can you recall? You mentioned earlier where your congregation was in the Strip District.
You mean, it was 28th. I'm positive it was 28th Street.
In a separate building? Or
separate what? Building. It was like a clothes closet, you know? Separate building. It was...
And you said it was 28th.
Our boys, used to go to shul when it wasn't a holiday, when I was just fixing mm-hmm. the pretty things or something. He would be running all over the place, and there was nobody to say sit down or stop. Or, I mean,
sounds very nice.
Yes,
it was 28th and Liberty, I believe. You
28th
said.
And Liberty, yeah. And I remember my children, the older two boys, Sydney and Jack. They'd go to the synagogue. That's our synagogue mm-hmm. to study for the bar mitzvah, and. They were always beaten up by the boys there around the Italian kids.
Mm, a lot of anti-Semitism.
But also children who were left loose. You know, they didn't know what to do with themselves. The mothers and fathers, I don't know where they were. Little kids, you know, and they'd be fighting and beating up my kids. So I decided my children are not going to be beaten up. So I made my house the synagogue.
Huh. So there
I had
were
the
Hebrew...
rabbi coming to my house and all the children to my house.
So you
when
had
the
Hebrew
rabbi came,
right
I had
yeah.
orange juice or whatever, hot tea with cake and everything. You know, I don't have to tell you.
So you made a pleasant little school
right
there in
right,
your house.
Right.
I see.
That's
great.
What I did.
That's lovely. That's a good story.
Yeah. And my husband would sometimes, you know, for instance, he had to buy all the fruits and everything. He would go around collecting for the fruits and the candy, you know, mm-hmm. everybody would chip in.
Can you recall how many boys there would have been in your little Hebrew school in your house?
Well, in my house, it could have been from 5 to 6. Yeah.
So you had a nice group of
Cheder
boys.
Yeah, I had to tell them, this is not the synagogue, it's my house, and don't break anything.
Okay. A couple of other questions to back up a little bit. The war ended in 1918. Now, do you have any memories of what it was like then in your community on the Strip?
Everybody was dancing in the streets. There was so much noise and hollering and dancing and singing, and it was beautiful.
Hmm.
Yeah, I remember that very well. And my oldest son was 3 months old.
So you were dancing in the streets with the baby?
Yeah.
You also mentioned...
I was 18.
Yes, yes. You also mentioned that there, after the war, there was in a church near you, Father Cox.
Oh, yes, that's on 17th Street. He was on 17th Street.
Yes, what do you recall about him?
Well, I can only tell you that he used to come into the store and he, you know, slapped my husband on the back. He said, "Max, I need some stuff. You have to help me." There's a lot of poor men out there.
He worked with veterans of the First World War.
He worked with veterans of the First World War. He was very well liked. He wasn't that straight Catholicism that mm-hmm. you have to bow your head.
Mm-hmm.
He was very open and tried very hard to be friends with everybody. I liked him very much, even though, you know, we... I used to see him carrying away a half a sack full of black eyed peas or
from your store.
Yeah, or,
yes.
You know, and I'd say to Max, I'd say, "This can't go on."
Now, did he feed these poor veterans? Was that what he did with all the food?
Yeah.
Feed them in his
yeah.
church?
Yeah, to give them suppers as they would cook.
Hmm.
Sure. They lived in... They had no homes. They had lost their homes, and these people were they had no place to sit. They had no place to stand. So, and they, it was of cardboard that their little huts were.
But these know, right on the street. These
right on the street huts? On 17th Street.
Huh.
That's where the church is.
Right outside the church. They
yeah.
lived in these cardboard.
Yeah.
Huts.
At that time, it wasn't like it is today. They helped more, you know, and make sure that you have a place to sleep or something like that.
Mm.
Although there were a lot on the street. But in those days, it was new, you know.
And those were the...
Nobody slept on the streets, and nobody was that hungry, you know, that they were starving.
And those were the men who became known as Cox's Army?
Those are the men that were shot down by... When Hoover was president, you know, when they came to protest, they wanted help from the government. Yeah.
How did they get to Washington?
They walked.
They walked from
Pittsburgh.
That's
why it's called Cox's Army.
Hmm.
They walked. There's no way, other way to get there.
Did they come from all over the country to Pittsburgh?
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just know what happened in that little area.
Yes, and you saw those paper houses that they lived
yeah.
in.
Yeah. Hmm. Yes, they're so pathetic. I don't know who the men were or what. It wasn't in the papers.
Mm.
Or maybe it was and I didn't read it. And if I did, I might have forgotten.
Did other local people try to help them besides you and your husband?
I don't know, unless it was Catholic people, you know.
Mm-hmm. The church,
people,
you think?
But it was a failure then. They went to protest, is that correct?
They went to beg for relief to get some kind of money to help them. That's what they did. They didn't go there to protest anything. They just wanted help. And instead of help, they got kicked out.
Hmm.
That was a terrible thing. They don't talk about it today too much.
Hmm. No, you don't.
Well, you know, you want to, it's a new generation. And it's 2-3 generations later, you don't want to besmirch them. They had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
With a foolish father.
We need to go back. We have, I think, just a very little bit of time left. We want to talk a bit more about your childhood and some of the work that you did when you were growing up. This was before the child labor laws, you and your sisters. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, I can say that I found a lot of jobs, but I was fired from all of them. My mother would give me 2 rolls and butter in the morning to take for lunch and a dime. And I'd walk a lot, you know, from one place to another where I read the advertisement. And I was 14 at the time, 12, somewhere.
What kinds of jobs did youngsters work at in those days?
Cutting laces. You heard that story.
Cutting laces in clothing.
And there was one company that had Spanish combs, and you put a little paint in, like red or blue, you know, in between the creases of the plastic comb.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fired from that.
Were these children doing all these jobs? Young people working at these jobs?
Oh, my age.
So that would be
maybe
what?
15 or 16 years old.
Or younger than that, too?
Younger than that.
about.
Let's see. This is, we're going back now to some of the things that happened in Mrs. Shore's childhood when she and her sisters tried to find jobs.
Yeah, it was very difficult. And especially if you don't have any training, you have nobody to show. I was willing to work and I was strong enough, but I didn't know what to do. And the other girl, it was like, I have it, you can't have it, you know. Mm. That's it. They didn't want to show you anything. I also had a job at recording. You got the daily newspaper, and you put it up on a board like an easel, and you check the names of all the millionaires to see if there's anything bad written about them, or anything, even good. And you cut that out, you pasted it. This was, let's say, the Post Company, from Serial. This was the Post Company. This was Heinz. This was
who wanted that material? Was
the people the like the Post? They wanted that material.
Oh, I
and they
see.
Paid for that reading.
So these companies that these millionaires were the heads of,
yeah,
paid for people to look for items in the papers about.
Right,
them.
If there's anything not right, or you know. Everything has to be cut out and pasted, put on together with that. I worked in that. I don't know what it was called. I forgot what it was called. I liked it.
And these were young people doing this kind of job also, mostly?
Yeah, young people, yeah. Mm. My first job wasn't very nice. It was, this is a roll of ribbon, and on top there's a label. So you picked up your labels and they were already glued, or you glued them, I don't know, then you